The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Libertarians Working for You with host Arvind Vora. Our program explains how to solve the most critical problems we face in America today: unemployment, debt, healthcare affordability, high taxes, loss of personal freedoms, loss of privacy, threats of war, and more. Now, here is your host, Arvind Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. If you look around the world today, here's what you're seeing. You're seeing more and more groups, more and more nations, more and more political movements that are all basically saying the same thing. They're saying that they're sick and tired of the old way of doing things. And while we may not realize it right now, all of that strongly influences what's happening over here. All of that's going to affect our own futures. All of that's going to affect the future of us as individuals, and it's also going to affect the future of America. Let's just talk about a couple recent examples. You guys already remember Brexit, England, Great Britain, leaving the European Union, saying, we don't want all these laws. We don't want all these restrictions. We don't want unelected bureaucrats telling us what to do. Now, whether you agree or not that it was a good idea, there's absolutely no question that as soon as that Brexit vote happened, Britain did two things right away. And those two things are what is actually going to be shaping the upcoming global economy. The first thing that they did is they lowered taxes. They dropped their corporate tax rate. They dropped it. They dropped it by from, I believe, 25%, and then they discussed lowering it to 15%. And for a tax-loving country like Britain, that's a pretty huge drop. I mean, even in America, a tax drop that big would be a huge deal. The second thing that they did is they got rid of some of their regulations. They said, listen, a lot of these environmental regulations, or a lot of these, you know, calling them environmental regulations is wrong. Let's call them what they are. A lot of these crony capitalist excuses masquerading as environmental regulations are getting in the way. They're not helping. They're not improving things. They're taking away the incentive to make environmental technologies that work and instead subsidizing the environmental technologies that do not work. And so they got rid of that department. They got rid of their equivalent of the EPA. They basically said, listen, if you want to use LED lights, if you want people to use LED lights, make them good. If you want people to use other types of solar, you want people to use solar, make it work better. See, they realized two things. One, they didn't have the money to subsidize people who can't do stuff well. And two, I imagine quite a few of them realized that if you actually want countries around the world to use green technology, the only way to make that happen is by making that green technology compete until it actually can stand on its own. In America, we haven't gotten that message yet. We still think that if we just subsidize solar energy, that's going to make the rest of the world adopt solar energy. But that's false. When you subsidize solar energy, you're basically saying it's okay to not be very good at it. It's okay to have substandard solar energy. Solar energy that cannot compete with non-solar energy. And that's why there's so many problems with adoption worldwide. On the flip side, a lot of companies have made some green technology that is actually working pretty well. And guess what? We don't have to bribe anybody to use it. People just use it. Why? Because it works. The same time right now in Iceland, what are we seeing? In Iceland, we're seeing the brand new, and we're talking this political party is 4 years old, the brand new, I kid you not, pirate party is currently predicted to win the next election, to win this election, this November's election. The Pirate Party, as the name suggests, is a somewhat anti-status quo party. Among other things, they believe in absolute strict respect for privacy. They've argued that they want to make Iceland a haven for privacy in the same way that Switzerland has been a haven for banking. They want it to be a place where your privacy is absolutely protected. Now look at that. Look at the words that they're using. They want it to be a haven, as in they're saying we want people to come to Iceland in order to get more privacy. What do we see in England? We're England saying, Great Britain saying, we want people to come to Great Britain in order to pay lower taxes, in order to not have to deal with some of these nonsensical regulations that don't actually even achieve their supposed goals. What you're seeing over here, and what you're seeing in many other countries right now, is countries are starting to realize that they're just like businesses. They have to compete. Countries are realizing that they have to compete for businesses. They have to compete for productive citizens. They have to compete with each other the same way any business does. And I know you guys, sometimes we get this idea that businesses have to compete for customers, which they do, but guess what? They also have to compete for workers. A very effective business is also not going to be just good at providing a service to the customers. It's actually going to be good at attracting and retaining skilled and talented workers. That's a fact. And countries are realizing the same applies to them. The reason I bring this up is because right now, America is doing the opposite. It is one of the few countries that hasn't fully realized that it needs to compete for citizens. The irony is unbelievable because America was started by realizing that it needed to compete. It needed to bring people over from Europe into this unfamiliar world. How do they do it? Lower taxes, less regulation. America has known that lower taxes and less regulation bring productive, excited, engaged people. They've known that since before America was a country. They've known that. America knows that better than anyone else could possibly know that. But America's forgotten that. You don't believe me? While other countries are saying, listen, let's get some highly skilled labor over here. Let's get people to come here and start businesses. Guess what America's done? It's done two things. First, it's made a bizarrely low cap for skilled workers. The H-1 cap is inexplicably low. Then, in addition to lowering the cap to just bizarrely low levels, it then also counts spouses and kids. So, for example, when one person gets a work visa, they don't count that as one person against the already ridiculously low cap. They count it as if that person has a wife and two kids, they're saying, well, that's four visas that were given. They're saying that all three of those people are skilled labor. As if somehow somebody's like 5-year-old kids are going to be they're competing for skilled worker jobs or something. I mean, it's preposterous. The second thing that they've done is they make it impossible for people with H-1 visas or student visas or any other kind of visa to come here and literally start a business. Now, I don't care what school of economic thought you come from. You have to accept that people starting businesses creates jobs. There's no possible way to disagree with that. When you start a business, it's going to create a job. If it's a very small business, it's just going to create a job for you, but as your business grows, it's also going to create jobs for other people. The idea that starting businesses doesn't create jobs, I don't think any school of any economic thought believes that. But it seems that the U.S. government does believe that because people with those visas can't start businesses. The closest you can get is something called an entrepreneurial visa and requires a $1 million investment. Now, if you look at all the great startups, the great small businesses around the country today, you talk to the people that started those businesses and ask them, when you started, did you have a $1 million starting stock? Did you start off with $1 million? When you started this amazing restaurant, did you have $1 million? When you started this great school, did you have $1 million? And you know what they're going to say? They're going to laugh at you. Of course I didn't have $1 million. What in the world startup starts out with $1 million? And in other words, they're finding literally every possible way to keep out the most productive job creators. What's the second thing America's doing? High, huge corporate taxes. So high, while other countries are saying, listen, corporations, come here, bring jobs here, bring technology and innovation here, America's saying, no. We're going to make our rates the highest in the world. Or among the highest in the world. Maybe not the number one highest, but pretty high. You guys go somewhere else. Take your. We don't want your jobs. We don't want your corporate. Take that to Britain. Take that to the Cayman Islands. Take that to Ireland. Take that somewhere else. We don't want that here. Apple, we don't want you here. That's the result. They've made their corporate taxes so high that it's literally pushing business away. Income taxes. Same result. Income taxes are so high that they're not just pushing companies away, although they're certainly doing that. They're even pushing individuals away. They're literally pushing away the people who are some of the most creative visionaries in our country. Last year, record high number of Americans, guess what they did? Tore up their citizenships. Renounced their citizenships, left. A lot of these were some of the richest, most productive people. We're talking about people, you know, just a couple of years, people like Eduardo Saverin, the co-founder of Facebook. That's the guy we want to push away? It seems that the only group that the U.S. government is at all interested in allowing in is refugees. Now, listen, I have no problem with refugees. But the idea that the refugee cap should be higher than the entrepreneur cap is insane. That the refugee cap should be higher than the skilled labor cap is nuts. Those caps on skilled labor and entrepreneurs should be gone. There should be no cap at all. Those are the people who come and create jobs. Creating a cap on that group of people is literally creating a cap on jobs. And it's not like we're not losing the jobs. And people are like, well, they're losers. Those jobs are already being lost. Right now, people are simply shipping the entire job overseas. They're not hiring workers from overseas. See, here's the thing. You hire a computer programmer from another country to come to work here. Guess what happens? He's going to eat. That means he's going to go to the grocery store. He's going to go to a restaurant. He's going to have entertainment. So he's going to go buy a book room. He's going to buy stuff here in America. You ship that job overseas. Whatever he spends, he's not spending in an American restaurant or an American, you know, clothing store. Not because he doesn't want to, because he can't. You got to bring people here. You've got to make America competitive. If America becomes competitive, and I mean regulatorily competitive, immigrationally competitive, tax-wise competitive, if we make it competitive, then America is going to see a golden age like nothing we've seen before. If we continue on this current thing, it's going to be it's going to be what we've been seeing, a gradual downhill slope, more and more businesses leaving, now more and more individuals leaving. Eventually, other countries are going to do to America what America did to Britain. They're just going to pull the best and brightest from America. Listen, I don't want to see that happen, and I know that you don't want to see that happen. I know that you and I probably agree on one thing, which is we want America to be the best country in the world. And we know that the only way to make that happen is to get rid of taxes, regulations, and attract the best and brightest. And if you want to make that happen, go to lp.org. There's only one political party in the country that is actually working to make America truly competitive, attract the best and brightest, stop pushing out the best and brightest, and that's the Libertarian Party. That's the only party that's serious about lowering all taxes or eliminating them. It's serious about lowering regulations or eliminating them. With the Libertarian Party in charge, we're going to see America thrive. And the first step to getting involved is going to lp.org. If you want to get involved in your state, you can even go to lp.org/states. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. We'll be right back.
Ready to chat about your favorite soap operas? The Daytime Discussion is here with Dan J. Kroll and Soap Central Live. For the past 15 years, Dan has been dishing and discussing on SoapCentral.com. And now he's taking the talk to the airwaves of the Voice America Variety Channel. You'll go behind the scenes with the biggest stars of daytime, along with guest commentary from the Soap Central columnists. And we'll take your questions and comments during our live show. Soap Central Live, every Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
you are interested in real estate in America's largest city or anywhere, be sure to listen for Good Morning New York Real Estate with Vince Rocco. Although our focus is on Manhattan and other real estate markets in and around New York City, we'll have plenty of information that will help you successfully buy, sell, and close a transaction no matter where you are in the world. Good Morning New York Real Estate with Vince Rocco can be heard every Tuesday at 9 a.m. in New York, 6 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvin Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. You've seen some of this idea, some of this competition happening already. You see, competition isn't only about taxes and regulations on businesses. I mean, that's certainly a big part of it. There's another thing that attracts people, and that's freedom. People like freedom. People like being able to do the things that they like being able to do. It's almost obvious, but apparently it's not that obvious or hasn't been that obvious to many countries. And certainly not that obvious to this country for many, many years. One of the things that we're seeing right now, look at the economic explosions going on in Colorado. And I don't mean just like the monetary side. Forget that. Forget that for a second. I mean, the monetary growth, obviously, if it's the only place where you can buy a product, you're going to see monetary growth. You're going to see that financial growth. That's obvious. I'm talking about the secondary growth, the innovation that's going on in Colorado now that marijuana is legal. Where in the past, with the government bans, you had basically no innovation going on in that area. Now we have horticultural innovation going on. We have people creating all kinds of new marijuana derivatives, beverages, whatever, beer and liqueur and all kinds of stuff. Now, listen, I'm not like a huge fan of marijuana, by the way, but I am a huge fan of innovation. And when you see that kind of innovation happening, you know what's happening? You're preparing an entire group of people to become innovative in all kinds of areas. Right now, people are just innovating in – you have all these people are innovating in maybe marijuana-based things. But guess what? That innovation skill transfers. And even if it just stays over there, that's something that's creating jobs. That's something that's creating employment. It's creating a valuable service for people. It's creating products. It's creating all these things. For decades, if you wanted to use marijuana legally and safely, you have to go to Amsterdam. Now you can just go to Colorado. In other words, that's a place that can draw in not just innovation, but even tourism. When you see that, I mean, that's really what America was always supposed to be. It was supposed to be 50 states competing with each other. 50 states saying, well, the laws here are like this, the laws here are like this, the banking here is like this, the banking here is like this. Take your pick. We've all grown up in a time, for example, when there's pretty much one U.S. currency. For the most part, until very recently, there has been one U.S. currency, the U.S. dollar. But before that, before the creation of the central bank, you had different states, you had different private organizations. You could pick the bank that you trusted the most. We all trust the U.S. government bank, the Federal Reserve Bank, a little bit. We know for certain that they're going to devalue the currency. They have for decades. We also know that their currency is pretty widely accepted, so we just kind of deal with it. But we're not necessarily always super happy about that. We're not always saying, man, isn't this great that we have to use this currency that constantly loses value? But imagine if, and this is the case that we're coming closer to now, imagine if you could just use whatever currency you wanted. And I don't mean just state-run currencies like the dollar and the euro. I mean private currencies like Bitcoin and Litecoin and all the cryptocurrencies. What does that mean? What does it mean? It means that not only does the government, does the United States government have to compete with other governments for businesses and citizens, it actually now has to learn to compete internally. Right now, the Bitcoin economy is growing. It's exploding. It's you know, if Bitcoin was its own economy, it'd be one of the fastest, if not the fastest growing economy in the world. And you know, part of that is because it's new, but part of that is because it also offers something that other economies don't. Lower taxes. That's a big one. It's not that the taxes on Bitcoin are zero. You have transaction fees, which are pretty much the same as a tax. And those are real fees. They're not zero. But they're also not 40%. They're 2% or something like that, maybe less. And now you have a situation in which the U.S. government is becoming increasingly unable to compete, not just with other countries, but with its own self, with currencies and economies that are happening within our own borders. What happens if we let that continue? What happens if the government will say, go ahead, government, keep being as uncompetitive as possible? Well, eventually it's just going to go out of business. It's not going to be able to fund itself. And I'm fine with that. It's not that I think that's a bad thing at all. The only concern that I have is if instead of competing, the government just, you know, is kind of forced out of business by Bitcoin. My concern is that historically, governments tend to be kind of violent. And while I would certainly love to see a situation in which we have private currencies and private exchange and cryptocurrencies and all this kind of stuff, and we don't have, you know, the government taking taxes for nonsensical or destructive purposes, while I would love to see that, I would be much happier to see that if it happened with a smooth and orderly transition instead of with violence. And in order for that to happen, the government's got to start being competitive. It's got to start saying, listen, there are other offerings, there are other sources of currency, and we're going to start making our currency competitive. And that also means we're going to make our tax system competitive. Right now, the U.S. government's tax system is simply not competitive with Bitcoin or with the Cayman Islands or with so many other places. There's a second part of competition that I think is important, which is at one level, if you're whether you're a country or a business, you have to compete by offering better products, better services, attracting the best workers, all that. All right, great. But there's a second thing that's important, which is don't do all of your competitors' work for them. This is not a major issue in business because I've never heard of a business, you know, paying the fire insurance premiums for its competitors. I've never heard of that before. Businesses don't do that because businesses don't think like that because that's just stupid. I've never heard of a business saying, you know, I've never heard of, for example, Nike saying, like, you know, New Balance, we don't like these guys that much. We're in competition with them. We want to compete successfully with them. So the first thing that we're going to do is we're going to build them a building. And then the next thing we're going to do is we're going to pay all their insurances. And the next thing we're going to do after that, we're going to pay their electric bill too while we're at it. They don't do that because no one thinks like that. Why would anyone think like that? But right now, with your tax money, the government's doing just that. People talk about the healthcare in France. By the way, the healthcare in France is nowhere near as good as people pretend it is. It's actually not good at all unless you just don't really have to use it for anything. You want to get any kind of surgery, you know, wait in line. But even if we pretend for a moment that France has a halfway good healthcare system, why? How can they do that? Are they so much better at managing money? No. It's that we're basically doing their most expensive work for them. We're literally providing their national defense. And to England, and to Japan, and to so many other countries. We're saying, listen, you sign this piece of paper. You say that you're a NATO country. And then we're going to provide your national defense forever. Well, wouldn't that be expensive? Yeah, no kidding, it's expensive. Why do you think the U.S. spends more than the next like 10 or 12 countries combined on national defense? Is our nation, which is surrounded on both sides by water, so much larger and more indefensible than other nations? No. It's because we're providing for the defense of anyone who joins NATO. If you join NATO, you don't have to do anything. We're going to take care of that. we take it to the next level after that. We're saying, listen, we're also going to get involved in civil war. I'm like, they call it a civil war because it has none of your goddamn business. The United States has no business being involved in anybody else's civil wars. The United States should not be in Syria at all. It shouldn't be in the Middle East. It shouldn't have bases in Germany or Japan or Korea. That is not the job of the U.S. military. The U.S. military, if it should exist at all, and I certainly have questions about that, if it should exist at all, should only be providing defense for the U.S., not for the U.S. and all of NATO, not for the U.S. and the entire U.N., not for the U.S. and one side of every single civil war in the entire world, just the U.S. And think about how much more competitive that makes the United States. Think about how much more competitive we become when we don't have to have those huge taxes. Think of it like this. If somebody knew that they could come to the United States and enjoy greater freedoms and enjoy lower taxes, and not have to pay all these extra taxes to provide defense for every single country in the entire world or half of one country in every single civil war. Imagine if people knew that. Who's going to come to America now? Everybody's going to want to. But we can then make it so that we're bringing in the most productive. Now, of course, there's another part of that. It's not you also need to not just not pay for the defenses of other countries from other countries. We also have to think internally. I mean, right now, U.S. immigration policy has become amazingly skilled at letting in the people we don't want and keeping out the people we do want. I know that sounds harsh, but that's a fact. Right now, if you get sponsored by your kids and you're 85 years old, you come to the United States, guess what you get? Social Security and Medicare. You never paid into it because you weren't in America, but you still get those benefits. That's what we call a super counterproductive immigration policy. You come to America right now, yeah, you can't come to America and start a business. You can't come to America for a skilled job, but if you want to come to America and enjoy free public school tuition, free healthcare, and you know, subsidized college tuition, yeah, you can do that. Again, keeping out the productive to keep in the people who are, frankly, I mean, a non-productive drain. That's a counterproductive immigration policy. Libertarian immigration policy, I think, is the best one, which is open borders, no welfare. You want to come in, fine. But no one's going to pay for anything for you. You have to pay for your own stuff. You want to go to school? Pay for it. You want to eat? Pay for it. You want health care? Pay for it. If you can pay for it, come here. If you can't, then this is probably not the best place. Now, of course, none of that says that we can't have private charities. And the great thing about private charities is they help people become self-sufficient. They say, okay, you came in here, you're new to a country, you need some help. That makes sense. But the goal of a charity is not to keep somebody dependent for the next 50 years, but to say, listen, there's some transition stuff. We get that. It's a hard transition. You're going to a totally different country. It's not easy. But we don't want you in that transitional state forever, so we're going to help you up. We're going to help you out of it. That's the greatness of great private charities. Great private charities. I've met so many people who work in so many great private charities. Guess what? They help people move to a higher level. They don't keep people down. Government welfare, on the other hand, permanent dependency forever. Now, if you want to see that kind of immigration policy, the kind that ennobles people, the kind that brings the best and the brightest, the kind that turns people who aren't already the best and brightest into the best and brightest, then go to lp.org. See how you can get involved. A libertarian campaign in your state. I mean, you might decide to work at booths. You might decide to work on social media. You might even decide to run for office. But that first step is going to lp.org. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. We'll be right back.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
If you hear a dog barking or an angel singing, then you know that you're listening to Waking Up in America. Heard every Wednesday at 3 Pacific Time, Valerie Kirkhard and all of her friends will bring you powerful and humorous discussions that raise thoughts and give you insight on how to live your life to its fullest potential. Adventure is always a must on Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkhard, every Wednesday at 3 Pacific.
In the spirit of Have Couch, Will Travel, Dr. Carol Lieberman creates a haven of sanity in an increasingly insane world. Each day, we are bombarded with news of events that have never crossed our wildest nightmares. Society is spiraling out of control, and everyone is reeling from it. But now there's an answer. The best way to keep sane in this insane world is to tune in to Dr. Carol's Couch on Voice America. Dr. Carol, a certified media psychiatrist, will broadcast live from her Beverly Hills office every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time. Call or log in and get help with whatever is sending you reeling, whenever you need a soothing voice to calm and advise you. That's Dr. Carol's Couch every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time here on America's Voice, voiceamerica.com.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvin Vora.
You know, when you consider what country to live in, and a lot of people consider that, there's a lot of things that we think about. One of the big ones is healthcare. You don't want to be in a country with poor healthcare, and by poor I mean bad healthcare. You don't want to be in a country where the healthcare is great but completely unaffordable. You don't want to be in a country where the healthcare is theoretically good, but you have to wait for 4.5 years to get the procedure that you need. When you only have a few months to live, you want to get that procedure the next day. Now, right now, the United States is in a funny situation because it's one of the few countries that has had historically great and very affordable healthcare and then gotten very expensive and not very good healthcare. There's many countries that have never had great healthcare, but America's actually has had it. You know, before Medicare and before Medicaid got involved, before the government got involved, you know, and the healthcare was affordable. The service was incredible. I mean, you'd have doctors that come to your house. I mean, how many of you realistically have had that? I mean, concierge medicine exists, but it's not the norm. It's not something that the average middle class family has doctors coming to their house nowadays. That's a fact. There was a time when it was completely affordable. And now there's a time where it's not affordable. So something's happened. In other words, we've made some series of mistakes. If we could simply go back in time, we'd have something that was stylistically a little better. And if we added modern technology to that, we'd have something that's both affordable and better. You know, a lot of folks will say, listen, the reason that medical care costs more now is because technology has become more advanced. That's BS. Technological advancements lower costs. They don't increase costs. Modern day, the iPhone right now and the service plan costs less today, including inflation and all that, than in the 1980s a not very good cell phone would have cost. And that's a fact. In every single technologically driven area, price goes down. Even in medicine, if people say, well, that applies to everything, but medicine is this magical area where it doesn't apply. Well, actually, that's not true. Even in medicine, that applies. Classic example, LASIK. That is an advanced and complex procedure whose price has been plummeting. The price has been going down year after year. The quality is going up year after year. All other medicines, the price has been going up. I find it impossible to believe that something as complex as laser eye surgery is somehow much simpler than all the other medicines. You want to see a classic example? You got EpiPen. That's a government-granted monopoly. What do they do with that government-created monopoly? With a government-created monopoly, they raise the prices. What if they didn't have that? What if they didn't have that government-created monopoly? What if Americans could buy, you know, for example, if you don't like the computers that you buy in America, you can buy a computer from Canada or Britain or India or South Africa or anywhere you want. Do you want to buy a computer? You can buy a computer from wherever you want. Guess what that does? It lowers the price of computers. People know that if they made computers cost $400 billion, no one's going to buy it. But with medicines, you can't do that. Not that you practically can't do that. I mean, you physically can do it. I mean, plenty of people do it. You can't legally do it. That means doctors can't legally prescribe it. That means you can't legally buy it. You want to buy a medicine from Canada? Against the law. Keep in mind, by the way, that these are often the same exact medicines produced by the same companies in the same packaging with the same amounts and the same dosages. But you can't buy them. Well, who does that benefit? Obviously, that benefits drug companies. They can charge Americans more and people in other countries less, or people in still other countries even more. And it also prevents them from having to deal with competition. Consider EpiPen. What is EpiPen? What is it really? It's basically a syringe attached to a spring. It's not the most advanced technology. It's good technology. It's clever. It's helpful. It saved countless lives. I'm not saying it's bad. But it's not this like amazingly impossible to ever replicate super advanced secret technology. And we're basically talking about mechanical engineering here at a rudimentary level. But what if people could buy buy competitors from competing products from other countries? What happens now? EpiPen can raise their price. Then they also can go out of business when people buy stuff from other countries. So the question is, how do we make happen in medicine what has already happened in every other technological area, in every other technology-driven area? We just make medicine act like those areas. Do for all of medicine kind of what we've done for LASIK, but take it to an even higher level. Do it better. LASIK is good, but it's not the epitome of the best we can ever have. LASIK is complicated. iPhones are maybe even more complicated. Or equivalently complicated, who knows? You want to change this, the first thing we need to do is we have got to get rid of the FDA. It is the most redundantly unnecessary organization ever. Here's the thing. If you buy a strawberry, you know whose judgment you trust? Your own, because you just go buy the strawberry, all right? You buy a piece of electronics, you read consumer reviews, but it's basically you yourself are making the final judgment. But you yourself are probably not an electrical engineer. You yourself are not an expert in the field of electronics. You still buy it, but it's like you're not really an expert. You might, even if you're not a computer expert, when you buy a computer, maybe you get a couple of friends' advice, but you make that decision. But with medicine, it's different. With medicine, you buy a medicine with expert advice. You buy a medicine after getting it specifically recommended and chosen from all the medicines out there by an expert, somebody who has dedicated his or her life to that. When you get a prescription from a doctor, you're getting a prescription from a doctor. You are getting a prescription from an extremely high-level expert in that field who has compared his own experience or her own experience, colleagues' experience, read reviews, studies. This person really knows what's going on there. I guarantee you they know more about medicine than you know about fruit or electronics or computers or cars or anything else you've bought. They know more about medicine than you know about any of those things. There is no doctor on earth that simply says, oh, look, this medicine's approved by the FDA. That's good enough for me. Let me just start prescribing it. That would be insane. In fact, what they actually do is the reverse of that. A lot of times doctors they prescribe a medicine for a purpose that it hasn't even really been approved for that purpose by the FDA. In other words, the FDA approves it for one thing. The doctors prescribe it for a different thing. How do they know? Because they had their own experience, their colleagues' experience, and a lot of other research that they can catch up on to see. So even doctors don't even take the FDA approval seriously. But you know who does take the FDA approval seriously? The huge banks, the bank accounts that are required in order to pay for FDA approval. It's massive. And I don't just mean to prove that the drug's not going to hurt anybody. The biggest expense is the efficacy requirement, where you prove that this drug isn't just a placebo, as if buying a placebo would be the worst thing in the world. That efficacy requirement makes the cost of drug production in the millions or hundreds of millions or sometimes even billions of dollars. Think about this. If you remove that cost, what happens to the price of medicine? My guess, it's probably going to go down. My experience, it's going to go down. Now, there's a second part of this. We don't have to stop there. That, if we do just that, by the way, just that by itself is going to drop the price of medicine massively. But we don't have to stop there. Who says we have to stop there? Why should we settle for the medicine prices we had in the 1950s when we could have medicine even cheaper than that? When it could be even more affordable, why should we stop there? The next thing we should do, get rid of the insane laws that prevent foreign doctors from practicing medicine in America. I don't know how good the best orthopedic surgeon in Switzerland is. I guess he's probably pretty good. But I am damn sure that he is better than the 10,000th best orthopedic surgeon in America. I'd be willing to bet 10 to 1 on that. The difference is the 10,000th best orthopedic surgeon in America, it's allowed to practice medicine as much as he wants. The best doctor in Switzerland, the best orthopedic surgeon in Switzerland, cannot practice medicine in America at all. Not one bit. He can if he redoes his entire medical education. So if the head of surgery at the most prestigious clinic in all of Switzerland redoes his medical residency, which, by the way, he probably wouldn't even be able to get one. It's very hard to get an orthopedic residency as a foreign physician. If he redoes that whole thing, then he can do that. But A, why would anybody want to? And B, if it's actually impossible, he's just not going to physically be able to do it. Now, what if we just get rid of that? Say, listen, it's your body. If you want a Swiss doctor operating on it, rather than somebody who graduated from America's worst medical school and then went to the worst residency program but is still allowed to practice, if you choose the best doctor in Switzerland, that's your body. No one can tell you that you can't do that. What are the benefits? One, lower cost. Two, better quality. When you're working with the best of a pool versus the millionth best of a different pool, I mean, you get a better quality product when you're allowed to work with the best doctors of different countries. In other words, when they're allowed to practice medicine here. Now, the American Medical Association doesn't like that because they're afraid that it's going to lower the cost of medicine. Yes, it's going to lower the cost of medicine. That is the whole point. Yes, it's going to make medicine more affordable. That's the whole point. The American Medical Association might not like it. Guess what? That's a very small minority. That's less than 49% of this population. If all of us, it's also less, by the way, than 1% of the population. If all of us vote either through referendums or by voting for candidates, libertarian candidates who are the only ones who are working to make this possible, then that changes. It doesn't matter if the AMA likes it or not. If they want to make more money, they should make a product that competes better. That's how you do it. Apple doesn't compete by making Androids illegal. They don't compete by making BlackBerry illegal. They compete by just by competing the normal way. Try to make better products, lower costs, higher quality. That's the only kind of competition that should be in any way considered or tolerated. This other type of competition where you try to just make your competitors illegal, there's no room for that in a free market, and there's no room for that in a free country like America. That's a fact. Now, if you want to make that happen, if you want to make health insurance costs super low, $50 a month, or if you want to make healthcare that's so affordable that you don't even need to get insurance. After all, most of you guys don't have soft drink insurance that kicks in case you want to buy a soft drink. And soft drinks are just too cheap. You just go buy one. And what if healthcare was just that cheap that you didn't even need, that getting insurance, it wouldn't make any sense. It's just too cheap. Well, we can make that happen. And you want to make that happen? Go to lp.org. Get involved in the libertarian campaign. Make this a major issue. Let people know that there are other ways we can make healthcare truly affordable. You can work on social media, go door to door. In fact, you might even decide to run for office. But that first step is up to you, lp.org. Right now, you're listening to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvind Vora. We'll be right back.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Psych Up Live with host Dr. Suzanne Phillips is an insider's glimpse at a life from a psychological perspective. It's a look at what matters to us. Why do we laugh? How do we cope with stress? Are men and women really that different? What is it about our relationships? How are they formed? How they work out? And why they sometimes don't? Every week is something new to engage you. Psych Up Live is heard every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We'll turn up your perspective on life.
Being Here with Ariel and Shia Kane is an ordinary person's guide to modern-day enlightenment. This show is an exciting exploration which opens the door to living in the moment. Don't miss Being Here. Tune in every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern with Ariel and Shia Kane right here on the Seventh Wave Network.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
This is Libertarians Working for You. If you wish to connect with our show, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to comments@lp.org. Here again is Arvin Vora.
Welcome back to Libertarians Working for You. I'm your host, Arvin Vora. My guest today is Donald Rainwater. Now, he's running for state senate in Indiana in District 20, and we're going to talk about the right to defend yourself, Second Amendment, and ways we can improve people's ability to defend themselves. Donald, welcome to the show.
Arvin, thank you for having me.
Let's talk a little bit about what you would do to improve the right to carry and how that's different from what they have right there right now.
Well, I will be perfectly honest with you. What I think we need in the state of Indiana is a constitutional carry amendment mm-hmm. that says that when the Second Amendment says that you shall be able to keep and bear arms and that will not be infringed, that means that it won't be restricted. That mm-hmm. means there are not laws that say that you have to have a permit to carry a gun. There should not be restrictions on what type of gun you can own because infringement is restriction. And mm-hmm. the Second Amendment clearly says that it shall not be infringed. So from my perspective, if folks really feel that there should be a change to what should be allowed, the only way that should happen is if they go out and they create an amendment, propose it, get it passed, have the states ratify it. Other than that, there should be no laws affecting gun control, gun ownership, or the carrying of guns by the citizens of the United States.
Now, that makes a lot of sense to me, to be totally honest, because you're right. If something is a constitutional amendment, if you want to change it, you can. There is a way to do that. It's not by just passing a law through Congress, though, or through the State House. It's by passing an amendment. And that's been right. done. You've had amendments passed and other amendments passing to overturn the original amendments. That's fine. There's a way to do that. Now, exactly. Let me ask you this. When people say, well, listen, the Second Amendment was written at a different time period, and that time period is different from what we have right now, how do you respond to that?
Well, I don't think that Webster's Dictionary has changed the definition of any of the words in the Second Amendment in the last 250 years. Interpretation, I can interpret any of the amendments in the Constitution any way I choose to. Interpretation is an individual thing. We are not at the whims of individuals in this country. we are a constitutional republic. And therefore, we have to take the words as they're written and determine that if it has a concrete definition, that's the definition.
Mm-hmm. Now, that, and also, that doesn't change the fact that if people say, if the American populace as a whole says, listen, that's a different time, this is a different time, that's not saying that they can't pass an amendment.
That's correct. But it needs to be an amendment. It's not the members of Congress deciding that they're going to change it or they're going to further define it. It is not up to them. We did not elect the members of Congress to interpret the Constitution for us. Mm-hmm. That's not the purpose of the Congress. The interpretation of law is for the judicial system, but here again, you cannot pass legislation that restricts or infringes someone's right to keep and bear arms. The judicial system should immediately say that's unconstitutional, and there should be no discussion past that.
Let's talk about this. Let's talk about, I want to take this to the next level a little bit, which is when people talk about the right to bear arms, what are the benefits? I mean, why is it even a good amendment? Because I presume that you, like me, if that such amendment was proposed to get rid of the Second Amendment, would fight vociferously against it, would, if anything, prefer that it, if anything, strengthen the Second Amendment. So why, I mean, why do you think it's good?
The Second Amendment itself?
Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, the framers of the Constitution, I believe, had lived in a society where they were governed by people who did not understand, nor were they concerned with, what was best for them.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to take up arms to fight for their inalienable natural rights.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that they foresaw the possibility that the government that they were framing could at some time in the future
mm-hmm.
become that type of authoritarian, oligarchical, tyrannical government, and that mm-hmm. they wanted to give the citizens the means to take their freedoms back and to start over. And if that meant having to take up arms against a government that had become too strong, too powerful, and had started taking away the rights of the people, that they were giving them a means to do that. And I believe that when people try to weaken the Second Amendment, that it is their desire to become that type of government
mm-hmm.
that gives them that desire to weaken the Second Amendment. Because let's be honest, when they use the argument that gun violence is their reason for wanting to have gun laws, that makes no sense, because gun violence is almost always perpetrated by someone who does not have a permit and who did not purchase their gun legally in the first place.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, that I think is just 100% true. And I think it's so factual. I mean, it's so true that the only reason to oppose the vast majority of Americans owning guns could not possibly be to prevent the violence you're talking about. But you're right. It is in order. It's a first phase of trying to take away other rights, or honestly, already having taken away rights as a first phase of preventing people from really doing anything about it. Now, let me ask you this. If somebody wants to learn more about your campaign, if somebody wants to follow you, what's a good place for them to go?
Well, my website is www.electdonaldrainwater.com.
Mm-hmm.
And my Facebook page is basically the same thing, facebook.com/electdonaldrainwater.
Donald, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show today.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Guys, we just finished talking with Donald Rainwater. See, that's what I'm talking about. That's, you're not just talking about somebody here who knows what's good to do. Not just somebody who has an understanding of the role of the Constitution and what methods are needed to change it. Talking about somebody that's thinking a few steps ahead. And that's the type of person that you want fighting for you in government. That's someone you want looking after your rights, because that's not someone who's going to get sort of tricked or blindsided and think, oh, well, maybe this other – this is someone that can really see what's going on. You can see that in our discussion. And if you want to see more of that, if you want to see what else is going on, go and take out his website, electdonaldrainwater.com. Everything spelled just like it sounds. Now, thanks so much, guys, for listening today. There's so many things that you can do to get involved. You can get involved with existing campaigns like Donald's campaign. You can go to lp.org. Number one thing, though, I haven't said it yet on today's show because I wanted to save it for the end. Please, please remember to vote. Vote libertarian. Vote for the referendums that reduce government. The only person that can restrict and reduce government is you, and you have to do that. The way to do that in America is voting. So please remember to vote this November. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Arvind Vora, signing off. Until next week on Libertarians Working for You.
Thank you for tuning in to Libertarians Working for You. Please join Arvind Vora again next Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope you have a great week.